minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
My name is Jacob Morley. You can find me on Twitter at Jacob Morley. I'm joined by always by my co-host, Ross Uglum. You can find him on Twitter at Ross Uglum. Ross, pretty exciting weekend. We talked about maybe even avoiding talking about the Packers just to talk about Tiger. Do you have any Tiger takes?
Just that he's back.
He's back. That's what I was wanting to hear. He's back.
Tiger's back.
I saw viewership was up like 63% on Sunday when he was charging. And so that's fun. That's golf is so much more fun when Tiger's on. But we can't sit here and talk about Tiger Woods all 25 minutes. So we have some Packers news for you. We have some good stuff to get into. We're going to talk about some Pro Football Focus grades. We're also going to talk about some guys that have really stuck out to us the last week or so, and even going back to that Thursday night game. Really, the big news out of Packers camp today was the news on Cole Madison. Goody finally came out and kind of just told us, he still didn't really tell us anything. He kind of just said, you know, he's not going to be back anytime soon. And there are some rumors flying around out there about as of why, just out of respect to Cole. I don't think we're going to talk about any of those. But I think kind of what we can say is it seems like it's a personal matter. And obviously, Cole comes before football. So I think I'm going to kind of just take the road that Brian Gutekunst said and just kind of, hey, we support Cole Madison. Whatever he's needing to take care of, he's going to take care of. And if he can ever get back and contribute to the Packers, whether it be this year or next year, that'd be great. But it's kind of up in the air right now.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you'd like the kid to be in camp, but you got to take care of yourself before you take care of football. And, you know, if he contributes this year, great. If he retires, you know, that's really too bad. But, you know, he's got to do what's best for him or he's not going to be an effective football player anyway. So just hope that everything turns out well for Cole.
Yeah, well said. So moving on from that, though. So at Thursday night's game, Pro Football Focus, Andy actually touched on this just a little bit yesterday. He talked about the top five grades out of the game for the Packers, and they were Davante Adams, Kendall Donerson, golly, I still can't say his name, Brett Hundley, Ahmad Thomas, and Marquez Valdez-Scantling. Did I get that right? I think I did.
Yeah.
Nailed it. Awesome. And I think, you know, we don't really need to talk about Devontae. We know that he's good. I would expect him to be kind of in that fringe elite grade this year anyways. Kendall Donerson only played a handful of snaps. He's an interesting guy, though. When you go to the relative athletic scores from this entire draft class, I think he has like the second or third highest out of all of those guys. Clearly, he's a flyer. He is a lottery ticket type player, but he has rare athletic traits. So, you know, even though he played only a handful of snaps, it's really good to see that he played well in those handful of snaps. He had a really nice forced fumble, stuck his hand in there, popped it out. Beagle jumped right on it. I think that was the big takeaway from him. He didn't really jump out to me other than the obvious splash play that he made. But that is encouraging. I don't know if you watched him very closely or not, Ross. I know you did a pretty extensive film review on some guys.
Yeah, you run out of time sometimes with a Thursday game. Friday being the last day of the work week, it's tough sometimes to get all the way through every single player. Finally got a chance after my film review, which is, of course, all done, you know, just on the MacBook here. Had a chance to see, and I know it sounds weird, but I had a chance to see NFL Network's replay just on, you know, the television. And it's a different thing, you know, it shouldn't be a different thing, but it is a different thing when you're just sort of sitting on your couch watching guys. I did see Donerson and then a guy we'll talk about in a second, Ahmad Thomas, linebacker, I think a second-year kid out of Oklahoma, really thought he played well as well. And those were guys that I did not get to right away in any kind of a film review setting. So I was impressed with both of them. I just thought that Donerson was – really solid, and that's not something you generally would expect out of a, you know, kind of a lottery pick type guy. You would expect him to lose big and expect him to win big, run a little hot and cold. He was just super rock solid and then had one, you know, game changing play. And yeah, does it, who cares if the game gets changed? It's an exhibition, but at the same time, it's not for him. You know, he has no rights to a roster spot handed down to him by just being a seventh round pick. So that's a big deal play by Donerson. And like I said, outside of that play, he was just rock solid.
Yeah. And you know, it's kind of just one of those performances where it's like, okay, 91 is on your radar. Keep an eye out for him in the future. Cause if he can, you know, as McCarthy likes to say, stack success, that's what you were looking for. And that's really all he can do as a seventh round pick. So promising performance for him. Take it for what it's worth. He didn't play a ton of snaps, but better than getting a terrible grade. So good for him. The next guy was Valdez Scantling. Obviously, talk about a guy that did completely jump off the screen. I think he put his tools were on display. The catch in the back of the end zone, the way he was able to use his body to catch that. Even on what really stuck out to me was, if you remember the play, I think it was in the third quarter, he didn't catch the ball. He laid out for a pass and he didn't quite bring it in, but you really got to see just a different type of gear when the ball is in the air with that guy. I mean, and that's a rare thing, especially with his size, but that ball was in the air and I thought he had absolutely no business even getting close to it. And he did. So I think, you know, watching him, I think he's still really raw as a route runner. I think he still has a lot to improve on in his game. But the guy went for 101 yards, some big splash plays. You know, it obviously helped that I think the Packers 1-4 arguably have some of the best quarterback play in preseason, which is going to be really fun to watch these, you know, to watch these 6'3 plus 4'4 athletes just run under some Kaiser and Boyle bombs this preseason. So looking forward to that. He was really fun to watch. I know he's one of your guys too, Ross.
Yeah, you know, I really felt like some sort of confluence of either Philbin being back or these guys just being a different animal as far as athleticism is concerned. This looked a lot different than Packers offense of the last couple of years. And, you know, like I said, it could be both. It could be the scheme, you know, that Philbin runs. He's a brilliant offensive coach, always has been. At the same time, it absolutely could be, you know, these guys are just bigger, stronger, faster than the guys trying to cover them. Does that mean they're Pro Bowlers today? No. But if Coach Ray, like I can't remember the name of the passing game coordinator, but obviously Coach McCarthy will have a huge part in their development, as will Coach Philbin. If those guys can accomplish a lot with these guys, I can't really imagine a group of receivers, maybe in the league, that just have the actual athletic upside that this young group of Packers kids does. Because you talked about RAS scores, you know, going in, these guys are absolute, I mean, they're outliers to be honest.
Yeah, they're all freaks. I mean, they really are. And that's, you know, when you take three guys at a position beyond the fourth round, you kind of hope, yeah, you know, I hope one of these, I mean, realistically, the statistics would say that even one of those guys, if one pans out, that would be good. But all three of these guys have shown that they can play in this league. You know, MVS really was the standout, but Equanimeous St. Brown, he did some really good stuff. And I honestly think he's probably, from what my eyes are telling me right now, he might be the furthest along in his development. Him in the slot looked nice. I mean, it did. He looked really natural there. And if you can get it, I mean, he's a legit 6'4", 6'5", slot fluid athlete as well. He's shown some ability there. Honestly, the biggest disappointment was Jamon Moore. And even him, you know, he had some drop issues, but you can still tell just by watching the guy, he's how big, strong, and fast he is. This guy belongs in the league and he's gonna figure it out. I think, you know, preseason is the season of overreactions as well. So people may be a little bit overreactive of guys like Valdez Scantling. And I think some people are down on Jamon Moore right now. I'm not. I think, you know, he just had a little bit of a rough game, still acclimating to, you know, life in the NFL. That was his first experience being underneath those lights. So, you know, guys handle it differently. So I'm still really excited about all three of those guys. They've all shown me a lot, even in one preseason game.
For sure. And, you know, it's so, yeah, I got into a Twitter argument, and you think anybody that follows me saw a lot of that, just because, you know, we've had so much success in Green Bay with guys with drop issues. And yeah, you know, Moore was drafted after Adams and Jones and Nelson, and And Jennings and Cobb never really had issues with drops, and frankly, neither did Driver. But there have been some, you know, Packers Hall of Fame level receivers that had real trouble holding on to the football for, I mean, James Jones had ball security issues beyond drops. And these guys, you know, Jones led the league in touchdowns. Devontae is one of the best six or seven receivers in football now. Nelson's a first ballot Packers Hall of Famer. It's just a thing that happens, you know, and either the guy can work through it or he can't. But to just assume and know and be convinced that
after one game,
what's that?
That's it. After one preseason game, too.
Exactly. After 25 snaps, to just be like, all right, well, bust. I mean, that's just, it's absolutely wild.
Yeah, it is. You know, and it's, you talk about, yeah, James Jones in his second, maybe even his rookie year, the Packers completely lost the game to the Bears because he fumbled like two or three times. And if the Packers don't win the Super Bowl in 2010, Jordy Nelson's the scapegoat. You know, even with the game he had two or three drops that, I mean, he could have set the Super Bowl record for receiving yards, but I mean, obviously those guys went on to be very successful Packer receivers. So I don't, you know, and, you know, even saying that about Jamal Moore, that, you know, it's hard to say either way, but I'm not going to write him off because of one game, but that's enough. I know the three rookie receivers are getting so much attention right now, rightfully so. I don't remember being as excited about a group of receivers, just even outside of them, like even talking about Kumerow. It's a great problem to have. It really is. They got some young guys to develop. You know, Kumerow, is he young? Not really, but beyond that, we'll move on from those guys. The next guy, highest grade on the list, was actually none other than fan favorite Brett Hundley. He looked good. He really did. He looked confident. He looked like, you know, he looked like a guy that's got tape on himself now in the NFL, and he was able to study it and look at it and maybe make some corrections. I thought he was, you know, super decisive with the ball in the game. I thought he was throwing the ball with a lot more confidence. That throw to Davante Adams down the left sideline, that's as good as it gets. You know, it's hard, you know, Aaron Rodgers can't throw a better ball than that. You know, no one can. That's a great ball. Can he convert that over to the regular season? Hopefully we never have to find out. But as far as that three-man race, really, yeah, the three-man race for the backup spot, I think saying just based off of what we saw in that first game, if you say it's anyone other than Brett Hundley, I think you're wrong.
Yeah, he played really well. I made mention in the film review of just how poorly he played at home. His statistics on the road were actually about, you know, what you would expect an average NFL starting quarterback to give you. And I think if he were able to replicate that at home, you know, Green Bay would have won one or two more of those games. And they would have been a completely different situation when Rodgers came back, being 9-5 instead of 6-7 or whatever they were. I just, you got to wonder, because he has played well in the preseason before. Guys talk about, you know, his preseason performance in past years, basically creating like a fourth round value for him. And the same scout saying now if they tried to trade him, they would get nothing, like maybe a conditional seventh, but that's it. So the regular season, you know, production, what he put on film, basically destroyed his value as an NFL player. So it's hard to really put a ton of stock into just more preseason film. Mm-hmm. You definitely, you know, I always say you scout traits and not results. And from a traits perspective, there were actual legitimate positive developments in the way he went about playing quarterback, as far as footwork, as far as confidence, command of the huddle, and just the willingness to try and fit the ball into windows as opposed to waiting and waiting and waiting. Those were some really, really good things, because he's always been able to spin it. I mean, he really has.
Say you're the Houston Texans looking for a backup quarterback. Do you dangle a seventh round draft pick for a Brett Hundley? Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't know about you, Russ, but if I'm the Packers, I take that in a heartbeat for him right now. I mean, I would roll the dice with Kaiser, but I really like Boyle too, and I'm hoping they keep three. I don't know. What would you do? Say I'm the Texans. I'll give you a seventh round draft pick. I want Brett Hundley. What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, I'd ask for a fifth. I'm so, you know, seventh round picks are just basically early undrafted free agency. You look at the hit rate on those and they're so low. I mean, is it something? Yeah, it is. It is something. and it allows you then to clear up a log jam. And I get that too. But if you really do believe that if something happened to Rodgers again, that of all the guys on the roster, Hundley actually still does give you the best chance to win. It's not a great position to be in, but that's not worth a seventh round pick to me. You know, if Philbin and McCarthy, say this time it's just like an ankle and it's 2 weeks, and Philbin and McCarthy really believe that they have a better chance to win the ball game with Hundley than Kizer, those two games are not worth a seventh round pick to me, if you kind of catch what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, that's a good way to spin it. That's kind of where I'm at too. It's, you know, the thing is, pretty sure Deshaun Kizer's younger still than Tim Boyle as well, as far as developmental guys. I think Boyle's 23 and Kizer's still, what, like 22, or about the same age. Hundley's probably, what, going into 26, 27. I don't know. And you've poured so much into Hundley. If, I don't know, that's going to be interesting the way that plays out. And, you know, there's still three games left. Injuries can happen.
Good and bad, because, you know, you have poured so much into Hundley that you would like to think you know what you have, and last season would tell you what you have is not good. So that puts you in an interesting shift. Do you spin that positively or do you spin that negatively? Oh, we need to win two games. Hundley's been here for four seasons. Okay, well, he's been here for four seasons and he's still, you know, has these wild splits and at home is the worst quarterback in the league and yada, yada. Do you, like I said, do you spin that positively or do you spin that negatively where, geez, we might as well give Kizer a shot, might as well give Boyle a shot because we don't know that they're terrible. We do know that Brett Hundley is terrible.
Yeah. You know, and if you look at it last year too, you know, Aaron Rodgers is going to obviously elevate the play of players around him. Brett Hundley's not a guy that's going to do that. So outside of Devontae Adams, who he had like 120 some passer rating throwing to, who was Brett Hundley? Who was he working with last year? You know, Martellus Bennett was such a dud that he kind of just blew up that tight ends room. Jordy, you know, I think Jordy's at the point in his career where he needed a stud quarterback to really make his game go. I mean, I think Cobb's kind of one of those guys too, that he needs Rodgers to really be a threat. So you could look at it that way, like, you know, Hundley's just an average NFL quarterback playing on a below average NFL offense last year. But it's hopefully it's something we don't ever have to watch again, and it's something we actually don't have to talk about anymore because it is over. But moving on from Hundley, a guy you mentioned earlier that had the fifth highest score was he is in his second year. He spent some time with the Cowboys last year, I believe, on their practice squad. Could be wrong on that, but his name's Ahmad Thomas, linebacker out of Oklahoma. I actually was really curious about him because I kept hearing his name. So I went back and watched some of his college film, and I knew he played safety. But what was really interesting about how they used Ahmad Thomas is he played a ton of single high at Oklahoma, and they used him like a lot of deep quarters, and he was not like the in-the-box, you know, kind of linebacker hybrid that I really thought I would see on tape. So that was really interesting. And I didn't really take a lot from it as from him playing linebacker or being able to say anything about his ability to play linebacker other than just watching his fluidity and how he moves in space. And that, which was impressive. You know, it's been really interesting just to keep hearing his name come up over and over again. I mean, it seems like they have two kind of young inside linebackers that are undrafted that they seem to be really high on. What stood out from Ahmad Thomas to you, particularly from last Thursday's game, Ross?
Speed and athleticism. I mean, this is your Joe Thomas replacement, which is funny because Joe Thomas is with the Dallas Cowboys now and either had a fumble recovery or an interception off of
the deflection. A nice interception off of deflection.
Okay, yeah. He was playing well for Dallas, and this the other Thomas has come from Dallas, but that's the role I see him filling. I had seen enough Joe Thomas, to be honest with you, and that might be mean, but I mean, he wasn't a guy. And so you fill that role with Oren Burks and then back Oren Burks up with Ahmad Thomas, and I think you might have something. And then, you know, you can maybe back Blake Martinez up with Greer Martini, and you can sort of patch together a linebacker group at a time in football when maybe off the ball linebackers are not as important as they used to be.
And that's a great segue because that's the next guy on my list. I don't know what Greer Martini's PFF score was, but he was the guy that stood out to me. especially on special teams. I think he can be a guy, and I think it was even you, Russ, that said it, you know, if you need to play Greer Martini 250 snaps on first and second down or obvious rundowns, I think you're fine. I really do. He seemed like a guy that can really play downhill well. I've heard reports in camp that, you know, he's even been getting a little bit better in the passing game, which anything he can do in the passing game, that's a positive for a guy that what you're going to be asking him to do specifically in the run game. That's just icing on the cake. Plus, he's got a really cool name, which I think a lot of people are immediately drawn to, but he's been able to play pretty well too. I know on special teams, especially on kickoff, you notice that the first couple kickoffs they had, they kind of kicked it down the right sideline, which just so happens to be where Greer Martini's playing. So I think that's a good indication of kind of what they think of him. And he also went down and made two special teams tackles as well. So he's a guy that I think him and Thomas, which it's weird to say at this point in training camp, but I almost think that both of those guys have almost locked up a roster spot, because I don't think there's anyone else. I mean, A, they're really thin at that position, so there's a great opportunity there for them. But they've played well enough to be on a 53-man roster in the NFL, in my opinion.
For sure. And like you said, the position, you know, kind of got really thin, and they serve specific roles. Like I said, the Burks role can be backed up by Thomas, and the Jake Ryan role can be backed up by Martini. Now, Jake Ryan isn't even there to be backed up, but that's still a skill set that they need, and frankly is a skill set that they need even more now that Jake won't play, you know, during 2018 or 2019 at all.
Well, this is a contract year for him too, right? That might be – we might have seen the last of Jake Ryan in a Green Bay Packers uniform.
Yeah, and if they don't, it's going to be, I would assume, really inexpensive, to be honest. I absolutely could see him, you know, 3 years, $12 million. Because what is your market for Jake Ryan at this point? Unless, you know, you're the Minnesota Vikings and you're still obsessed with signing old Packers. But, yeah, I don't know. Of course, you could replace Jake Ryan with Anthony Barr. But anyway, that's definitely a topic for a different day.
Fair trade. It's a fair trade. I'm going to touch base on one guy real quick, and then I'm going to let you take another guy. I know you have some takes on the offensive tackle position too, so I'll let you do that. But one guy that I thought really stood out to me was Dillon Day. He is also a guy that spent some time on some practice squads. To me, he looked really proficient in pass protection, and he's a guy that I think has pretty good athleticism. At least from watching him, it looks like he's got really nice feet. He's light on his feet. He's actually decent size for a center. So he's a guy that I want to kind of just keep my eye on as we move forward. And when he's in the game, I think he's a guy that's just, you know, center play isn't something that maybe the average fan is going to be watching. But if you get a chance to, I think he's got a chance to stick on this team. Another guy that no one's really talked about so far in any of these Pack-A-Day podcasts is the Packers second round pick, Josh Jackson, who, if you follow Ross on Twitter, Ross almost does like a live tweeting of Josh Jackson every time he gets a ball thrown his way. Ross, I just kind of want to hear what your take was on the young guy from Iowa.
I thought he played really well. You still saw his weaknesses in breaking routes. He gave up a little slant, had a guy running kind of free across the middle as well. So you're going to need the linebackers and safeties to kind of play well when they're playing with Josh Jackson. But what you end up getting, if you do have kind of good interior pass defense, is a kid who's capable of having five or six interceptions as a rookie if you give him 800 snaps. And he's a shutdown guy on anything up the sideline or anything to the outside. And that's what you saw when he played the slot and then tried to run the fade. There was no dice. Tried to run a goal line fade, no dice. Tried to run a little out pattern, no dice. And they called a kind of a ridiculous holding penalty on him. But, you know, he that was everything I thought I was going to see from number 37. And I think that has boosted his confidence, because all the reports out of training camp literally today were just a bunch of Josh Jackson raves. I mean, whether it was Tom Silverstein, or I think we had a couple guys in attendance that worked for Cheesehead TV, but everyone was just talking about how well Josh Jackson was playing today in practice, whether it be team period or one-on-ones. None of that is surprising to me, especially, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, you know that.
All right, Ross. I know we were talking off air a little bit about you had some takes on the offensive tackle play, which I think a lot of people are actually pretty concerned about. I mean, obviously you got Bakhtiari and Bulaga, who are great, you know, probably the best, up there with any duo in the NFL when they're healthy. But after that, what are your thoughts? What do we got? What do we got as far as depth?
I mean, there's no left tackle depth, and that's with almost every team in football. I wrote something about Murphy today on Cheesehead TV, came out this afternoon. No teams really have left tackle depth as far as your guy goes down and all of a sudden you can just call the same offense. And you can survive. I mean, the Eagles won the Super Bowl with Vitae at left tackle after losing one of the best that ever lived in Jason Peters. You can certainly get away with it, and that's exactly what Green Bay would have to do. They have to change what they do offensively. Right tackle, though, I'm not as concerned. Mentioned, you know, nobody likes Jason Spriggs. I personally like Kyle Murphy quite a bit more than the public does. Murphy and Spriggs, as I mentioned to you in the pre-production meeting, that's your number 9 and 10 out of 46 offensive tackles in preseason week one as far as Pro Football Focus is concerned. Now, Spriggs was not out there with the first team, so he was blocking third and fourth stringers, but he was blocking third and fourth stringers and not letting them run free at the quarterback, which is certainly a positive thing. You would have liked to see him get those reps against the first and second string guys. But Murphy, you know, being in the top 10 in the league in preseason week one as your starting left tackle playing out of position, again, I was impressed with him. I was impressed with his work. I really think he's a starting caliber right guard. I think he would be just fine at right tackle. McCarthy talked early in the season about just keeping him on the right side of the line, playing him a little at right guard, playing him a little at right tackle, and it sounded like a great plan. I agreed with it 100%, and boom, he's starting at left tackle the first preseason game of the season. So you wonder kind of what the thought process is there. I think the answer is that right now they feel like he is their best non-starting tackle, so they had no interest in getting DeShone Kizer and Brett Hundley killed. But I think he settles into that right guard, right tackle position when the lights really, truly come on, and I think he's going to be just fine. Had a couple of really good reps that I tweeted out against Harold Landry, and then, of course, did give up the classic Harold Landry corner dip sack. But I got to tell you, guys, there's a lot of people that are going to give up a corner dip sack to Harold Landry, and that should not cause you to lose heart with Kyle Murphy, because shouldn't have been playing left tackle, probably shouldn't have been blocking Harold Landry, but did an admirable job outside of the one sack that he did give up. And like I said, people, Harold Landry's going to sack quarterbacks. That's what he is going to do.
Yeah, and hopefully Bakhtiari and Bulaga just stay healthy. I think the offensive line after last year's fiasco is due for just 16 healthy games, 5 starters. That's my hot take, but it's probably not going to happen, but I hope it does. All right. I think we're pretty much out of time. Ross, thank you for joining me. We'll be back on in a couple of Tuesdays. Thanks as always for listening, and we will catch you guys next time.
Shotgun formation of 3rd and 15 to the 46-yard line of Dallas. They empty the shotgun. Cobb in motion to the left side. Rodgers looks it over, gets the snap. Backpedals now under some pressure. Steps up, throws it over the middle. Got Adams! 30! Turns upfield, 25! Cutting right to the 20! 15! 10! 5! Devontae Adams to the south end zone for the touchdown! Rodgers looks it over. Starts to his left. Now he moves, starts to the right side. Snap to A-Rod. Looking downfield, being flushed. Rolling left, winds up. Rainbows it high and deep into the end zone. It's hot. What is it caught? It is caught for a touchdown.
Yes!
A miracle.
Yes!
Pass up.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
In the end zone.
Can you believe it?
Unbelievable.
Believe it.
One kick away from the NFC Championship game. From the 41. Left hash mark. 51 yard. Field goal attempt. Snap. Placement. Kick. To the uprights. And it is right down the middle. It is good. And the Packers are going to the NFC Championship game.
And what a happy bunch of Green Bay Packers.